Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This episode is supported by the Jib Foundation.
Well, no matter how you look at it, the first interest rate rise in almost 12 years is bad news to Scott Morrison.
What today is about is what Australians are seeing as a result of our economy coming out of this pandemic.
Scott Morrison's economic credibility was already tattered, and now it is completely shredded.
Yeah, within hours of the Reserve Bank announcement, the rises were passed on to mortgage holders.
Big mortgages, little wriggle room.
So less money on holidays and takeaways and all of those kind of things that you spend your money on. Really just makes our cost of living higher.
Yes. Hello. Welcome to Jan Fran Has Issues. This is indeed the podcast where we break down the election one issue at a time. And given what's happened this week with the Reserve Bank lifting that cash rate, housing has been in the news, Daniel.
Oh, yeah, and the cost of living is going up and up and up, which means less money people can jump on to Patreon and help us make a podcast, Jan.
Oh, my God. I thought you were going to wait for the end of this episode for a plug.
No. I can't wait. The cash rate has gone up, Jan. 0.35%, Jan. People aren't donating to the Patreon as often as they used to, Jan. This is going to be a disaster for us.
This is going to be a disaster for so many people.
I'm excited this week to talk to Adam Bant, Jan. He is running a killer campaign for the Greens at the moment and got some interesting ideas about housing prices and what to do with housing affordability.
Mm.
But will he be able to get in, Jan? That's the quick question.
I mean, yeah, that's the quick question. One can dream big. But yes, we are going to talk to Adam Bant a little later in the show. We're also going to look at the Coalition's housing policy, Labor's housing policy, the Greens' housing policy, and kind of put them all together and see which comes out on top. But before we do that, before we get to our main issue, as always, we like to take issue with something that happened this week.
Mm.
This week, I'm going to take issue with Scott Morrison saying that he doesn't see things through a political lens when asked about it by a bunch of journalists. Have a listen to this.
It's not about what it means for politics. I mean, sometimes you guys always see things through a totally political lens. I don't.
Oh, that is great.
What? Okay, I'm just going to say that in the past 12 months, I've read two biographies about Scott Morrison, one called The Game by Sean Kelly and one called The Accidental Prime Minister by Annika Smethurst. If there is one resounding thing that you take away from both of those books, which are completely different books, by the way,
yeah,
one resounding thing that you take away, it's just how much of a political operative Scott Morrison is. That is all I'll say.
In fact, claiming that he doesn't look at things through a political lens is a political thing. Like, it means the electorate, you know, the delivery drivers and the tradies around Australia will go, no, mate, he's not political. The other people are political.
Yeah. I mean, if you're interested, I didn't intend to plug the books here, but The Game by Sean Kelly, The Accidental Prime Minister by Annika Smethurst, have a read. The other person who thinks Scott Morrison is political, because he would, because he's the leader of the opposition, is Albanese.
For this guy to say that anything is not political, this is a guy who gets up in the morning and what he has for breakfast is political. This guy for everything is an opportunity to play politics. He doesn't have legislation, he has wedgeslation. They sit around the cabinet, they don't think about the national interest, they think about how can we wedge Labor on this issue.
I reckon in that cabinet room there's sour cream and sweet chilli sauce there, there's so many wedges there.
Oh, good on you, Jason. God. Claire coming in.
So many metaphors to describe this. Albo should have just stuck with the breakfast thing. You know, what he had was political. He likes his toast and he smears it with jam and the NDIS and, you know, he could have gone that route.
No, I love a good 90s cafe food reference. Wedges with sour cream, baby.
Yeah. Another good 90s cafe recipe is focaccia, which is what this government is doing. They're focaccia-ing it whole up.
All right, what's your issue this week, Dan?
My issue this week is this bloke who got up at Josh Frydenberg's campaign launch, and he did a few impressions.
You know, Liberals will win because of Josh, but I'll just finish off with a bird call or two. Kookaburra. And a soft crested cockatoo.
Now, I have to beg difference here. That was not a sulfur-crested cockatoo. That was people who have home loans when the RBA increased the rate this week. So let's just make that absolutely clear. That guy was wrong. He really missed out on an opportunity to do a pack of galahs, which is what the government is.
Jan Fran has issues.
All right, well, to our issue of the week. It is housing, and we're talking about housing. Well, I was going to say it's been in the news this week. It hasn't. It's been in the news for the past two decades.
Hell
yeah.
House
prices have just risen slowly and slowly and slowly over an extended period of time. But this week, the RBA did raise the cash rate, which means that if you do own your own home and you have a mortgage, you'll be under some added mortgage stress. There's also the issue of rents being on the rise. So we're going to try and work out what is the deal here with housing in Australia. Are you sick of hearing about house prices? Well, too bad. The rising cost of housing is, well, it's quite the problem. Two things. Less people can afford to buy houses and rents are on the rise. Let's look at the first issue, housing affordability. This is the ratio of housing costs to household income. In the past few decades, costs, deposits, price of property, cost repayments have risen a lot. Incomes, not so much. Put it this way, in Sydney, Australia's most expensive city, the median house price in 1981 was $79,000. I am choking just saying that. It was five times the national full-time average annual salary. In 2021, the median house price was $1.31 million. That is 14 times the average income. This has led to a wee thing called housing stress, which is where you spend more than 30% of your gross, not net, income on your property. Want to know how many lower income households in Australia are under housing stress? More than a million. And that's based on 2017-18 figures. House prices have grown by 25% to record highs just since the start of the pandemic.
But part of it is stuff that, you know, we could have looked at decades ago.
Eliza Owen is a property analyst for analytics company CoreLogic. She says there are many reasons why we are in this hot mess.
So when interest rates go down, house prices go up. And really, since the GFC, we've been in an environment of structurally low interest rates. And a lot of that demand also comes from innovations in finance that have allowed people to buy housing using housing. The fact that we've seen a lot more investor participation in the market over time, which can crowd out other buyers as well. And I guess in some pockets, we've not seen development and new housing supply keep up.
Righto. To issue number two, rents. They are rising at their fastest rate in 13 years. Again, several reasons for this. Here's Eliza.
I think part of it has to do with COVID dynamics because you had a lot of people exiting our largest and most well-supplied rental markets and scattering to these areas that maybe aren't traditional rental markets and don't have as much available stock. I think part of it could also even be due to the home builder policy, the fact that a lot of people have committed to purchases of new homes that haven't necessarily been built yet, so they have to live somewhere. A lot of those completions of new properties are being delayed because of supply chain issues. We've also heard anecdotes of people just seeking their own space. So rather than renting out a second bedroom, maybe they're using it as a home office. That change in demand happens pretty quickly, but an increase in rental supply happens slowly. And that's where a lot of the rub is coming from.
I must say, the lack of rental relief in this year's budget was somewhat conspicuous. When asked about it, Scott Morrison said,
"This is about Australians getting into homes. Best way to support people who are renting a house is to help them buy a house."
So, short answer, there's nothing in the budget for renters, but also, what? The best way to support renters is to help them buy a home? What about the 30% of low-income earners in the private rental market who don't have $500 for emergencies, let alone the 5% deposit required for Morrison's first home guarantee scheme? What about them? And speaking of that scheme, this is the Coalition's plan to tackle the housing issue. 50,000 first home buyers will be able to purchase a property worth up to $900,000 with a deposit of just 5%. The government will act as guarantor for the remaining 15%. So this means that you don't have to save as much and you don't have to buy mortgage insurance. Labor's plan? They are proposing a shared equity scheme. So 10,000 applicants need a 2% deposit to buy a home, capped at $950,000, and Labor will contribute up to 40% of the purchase price of the property. This hugely reduces the cost of the home, but means that you don't technically own all of it. Labor is also pledging to build 30,000 new social and affordable housing properties in its first 5 years. They're the two major party policies, but Eliza reckons there's actually more to think about when casting your vote.
Think about what you want housing in Australia to be and vote that way. If you're comfortable with housing being that source of financial wealth gain and investment vehicle, then that's going to really inform how you're going to vote. But if you want that kind of change and focus on housing to be more of a social good that is where people just live, then obviously that's going to be important to keep in mind when you vote as well.
Housing as a social right versus housing as a way to build wealth. The Coalition sees it as the latter, which is not inherently bad. It just seems to be working out for some better than others. Labor sees it that way too, although not quite as much. There is one party that sees it very much as the former, though, the Greens. But to turn this ship around, difficult.
Housing has become so entrenched in our broader financial system. You know, it's something that helps people fund their aged care. It's something that helps people fund their health care. It's something that helps them build wealth in their family. And it makes up more than half of wealth for Australian households. So trying to undermine that value and take that away is pretty controversial.
It is controversial, but the Greens are going to jump at the opportunity. And here to tell us how is the leader of the Greens himself, Mr. Adam Bandt. Adam, welcome to Jan Fran Has Issues.
Hi, thanks for having us on.
First of all, I need to get straight into it. Try our luck with this question. What is the wage price index?
Okay, if you go to a search engine of your choice and have a look, you'll probably find that.
Look, I tried Bing. It didn't come up. But maybe I'll try Ask Jeeves and we'll go from there.
So on this ep, Adam, we're talking about housing. You know, obviously it's been a very big topic this week because the Reserve Bank has increased the cash rate for the first time in 10 years. Before we get into all of the policy stuff, I'm just kind of interested in your reflections on housing in Australia. How do you see housing? Do you see it as a way to build wealth? Do you see it as a human right? Or do you see it as a little bit of both?
Housing is a human right, and it should be a key role of government to ensure that everyone's got a secure and affordable roof over their head. But that's not what it is in Australia at the moment. It's pre-cooked. It's become a vehicle for investment and speculation. And so you've got housing prices going up and up and up, sort of turbocharged by government policies, because they've lost sight of the fact that it should be treated as a basic right, but is instead being treated as a stock market.
So talk us through your policies to kind of make housing more affordable here in Australia.
The big problem is that prices are rising too fast and debt is growing. And so people who want to buy a house end up with massive mortgages, but it's also pushing up the price of rents as well. So we've got, we're reaching crisis point. The average mortgage when Scott Morrison came to power was about $340,000. It's about $600,000 now. During the last 18 months of the pandemic, prices went up by about 25% for buying a house. What do we need to do? Well, we need to do a couple of things. One is stop making the problem worse and stop pushing up prices. And that means reining in the billions of dollars that are given every year in tax handouts to people who've already got multiple properties to go and buy their fourth, fifth, and sixth. Like, that shouldn't be, we shouldn't be spending public money on schemes that push up house prices and push them out of reach of first home buyers.
Are you talking about negative gearing in this instance, a tax break for investors?
Yeah, so negative gearing and capital gains tax discounts. It's into the weeds, but it's important stuff because it basically, these are the tax breaks that say if you've got multiple investment properties, you can write off any losses as a tax break. But then when you come and sell them, you can get a further tax break. So we're saying allow people who've got one investment property, so what are often called mum and dad investors, like allow that to stay. So if you've got one investment property, that's okay. But for after that, don't expect government support. Like, don't expect a government handout if you've got two or more investment properties to push that up. It's about $6 billion every year that the government spends on people who've got more than two investment properties on handouts in the form of negative gearing and capital gains tax discounts. So we're saying that we have to grandfather negative gearing to people who've got just one investment property. So stop fueling this problem by pouring money into the system. Secondly,
just one point on the negative gearing stuff, because I know that Shorten took it to the last election in 2019 and he lost that last election, which says to me, I don't know, I could be wrong, but people don't want that.
Well, I think the main reason that the last election went the way it did was because Clive Palmer bought up pretty much, you know, 90% of the space available on the airwaves and spent millions of dollars in advertising. Like, it was saturation, Palmer running attack ads on the opposition that I reckon played a big part in the last election. But also I think that, you know, look at it now, 3 years on, the problem's got a lot worse. And house prices, as I say, 25% rise in the last 18 months of the pandemic. And I think this time around, people understand that housing's cooked and we need to do something about it. I think there would be the appetite for what I think is a sensible policy of ours of saying allow it for people who've got one property, but you've got to start reining it in for the very wealthy. We don't need to be using public money for that. Secondly, as I said, the thing that we would, the other piece of the puzzle is to have a big build of affordable housing, housing that people can rent for 25% of their income or buy into for about $300,000. We're proposing 1 million homes over the next 20 years. And the cost of doing that, we've had it all costed, the cost of doing that is about a third of the tax breaks. So, like, it's about $21 billion over 10 years to do this. We're giving $63 billion in handouts over 10 years. Let's, instead of giving money to people to buy their seventh house that pushes up prices and makes it harder for you to buy your first.
I can tell you, as a first homeowner buyer right now, I'm in the market for my first place. I'm already worried about my third place. I've got to, you know, got to keep that in mind the way this market's going. Like, man, I've just scraped together my deposit for my first, but I've got to keep that eye on the ball for my third and fourth place, because otherwise I'm going to be left behind. No landlord left behind, Adam. No landlord left by. I'm not even a landlord. I'm an aspiring landlord.
Well, I think this election, it's probably time for a renters' revolution. I think the third part of it is that no one's talking about renters really at this election, and more people are renting, in part because the housing market is so difficult. But I think we need one of the things that means, I reckon, is that we need a rethink about the rights of renters, and we need to give renters more security. And in other countries, where renting is more the norm. You have the right for long-term leases. You have more protections against being evicted at the end of your tenancy on for no grounds, but just because the landlord might want to put up prices. It's that kind of thing, I think, that we need here as part of a national protection and standard of renters' rights too.
Hmm. Okay, so you've put forward 1 million publicly owned affordable homes to be built over the next 10 years. There's sort of 750,000 will be public and community house dwellings. There'll be 125,000 for rental homes that'll be constructed and 125,000 that are sort of part of a shared equity scheme. So that's kind of how you've split that 1 million homes. As you've said, it's going to cost around, you know, $21 billion. I think the Parliamentary Budget Office had it down for 23, but in that vicinity anyway. The thing is, there's scope for quite a lot of volatility over the next 10 years and just, I guess, a little bit of uncertainty in terms of, you know, supply chain, labour issues, construction costs. What happens to your plan if the price of construction goes up, and how do you stop it from creating knock-on problems?
Well, I think the one certainty that, you know, you can take to the bank is that if we don't do something, then the problem's going to get worse. I mean, just look at the trend at the moment. And if we keep going with the tax breaks that we are, and without building more public and affordable housing, the problem is just going to get worse. I mean, I think that is a certainty. We're proposing a million over 20 years, right? So you can...
20
you
years,
can,
sorry. I said 10 years. Yep. Yeah, sorry, that's a good correction.
But the costings that you're referring to are over 10 years. That's how far ahead the Parliamentary Budget Office looks. Look, part of the problem is that housing is being built and sold and treated for profit. It's that stock market syndrome that I was talking about before. What we're talking about is a rethink of that. And so we're saying government should be in the business of treating housing as a human right. And so we're talking about building and then renting out or selling on not-for-profit basis, okay? So, yes, so some costs may go up, others may go down over the 10 years. One thing we do know is that governments around the country sit on a lot of land. They have a lot of land from former sites, you know, former defence sites and the like that they have. Here in Melbourne, where I live, the state government owns a lot of land in the inner city. We're saying bring that to the table, and the Commonwealth builds houses and puts them on top. And so a lot of those will be units, sort of rather than freestanding houses. There's going to be a lot more units that are built. But once you stop making it about being for profit, and once you start saying government's got a role in ensuring everyone's got a roof over their head, the costs come down dramatically.
I just love this quote from the Financial Times from a couple of weeks back about how they articulated what our housing economy looks like. And the quote is, "The housing economy consists of residents buying and selling property from and to each other for ever higher prices using borrowed money in a surreal pyramid of paper wealth creation." And it's like it somehow requires a journalist from outside of Australia to look at Australia with fresh eyes to go, "Oh, that's a bit fucked."
Are they calling us a pyramid scheme?
That's it. I guess that's what negative gearing is, really. Like, to be able to, like, flip houses for ever increasing prices is a pyramid scheme. Yeah. Okay. If only we could build pyramids and people could live in them, that might actually be a better way to solve the housing crisis.
That won't be a very cheap alternative, though, Dan. Let me just say, I think the pyramids took like 100 years to get built. Okay, what you're proposing, Adam, I think requires a real rethink of housing in Australia. But we are so property obsessed in this country. I just want to give you a ridiculous story that is like the most Sydney story that has ever happened to anyone. I was going for a walk with my partner in the neighbourhood, and there was a house that had a for sale sign in front of it, and it said sold. And I said to my husband, I said, "Oh, that's the house that my sister was talking about that got sold recently. What did it sell for?" And so we're standing in front of this house, in front of this sign, with our, you know, athleisure wear on, trying to go on Domain to find out what this house sold for. And a woman strolling a baby just saunters past, doesn't even look in our direction, and says, "1.8 million, and keeps going. And we were like, "Thank you." You know, no hello, no stopping to chat. We're here to talk brutal real estate in Sydney.
Adam and that woman with the pran didn't have to Google anything.
But just on this point of it being a big rethink, like, yes and no. Like, I was explaining this idea of the government, you know, building housing and people being able to rent it at a fixed part of their income to someone the other day, to a journalist, and they said, yeah, it's kind of like what Menzies did, isn't it? And it's like, I don't quite know how to take that, but the comparison to Menzies, like in this instance, I'll maybe take it as a compliment, but the you look at those big tower blocks that we have sort of around my electorate of Melbourne, for example, that you see that are all public housing. They were built in the 60s, right? And population has grown since then, but the big build of public and affordable housing hasn't. So there's been this mind shift where it used to be something the government did was take it on as a responsibility to do it, and we dropped that off. But secondly, part of the reason that we're putting forward this scheme is that a chunk of the homes would be available if people wanted to buy into. You could buy into, and you buy into for about $300,000. You'd use it to pay down, and at the end of it, if you want to, you can sell it back to the government to sort of get the amount that you've gained on your mortgage. Or you can stay there for as long as you want. So it could be used as your first rung on the property ladder if you want to. And again, it's a shared equity scheme, but one that doesn't sort of just keep shoveling money into the private market to push it up, but gives people a sort of a rung on the ladder.
This is happening at a local level. My mum, for instance, is bought into a retirement place owned by the council, the local council, and it's not going to go up in value at market rates. It's only going to go up in value at a fixed rate as per council rules at about 3%. And that's in order to keep that place at a reasonable price so that the next person can take it over, you know, who needs aged care. And I think that makes complete sense to me. And it works on a small localised level, and surely it could work on a federal level too.
This sounds like I'm sure there would be people out there who look at this plan and go, this is a great idea, this is exactly what we need, and we need it to happen right now. What is the likelihood of this eventuating though, Adam? Because Albo has said he's not going to enter into a power sharing agreement with the Greens. So for the people banking on this policy, I mean, how much should they unclench their butt cheeks?
Well, you know, Anthony Albanese and Scott Morrison have both said, oh, look, if there's a minority parliament, we're not going to talk to anyone. It's our way or the highway. But you know, all the commentators and polls are suggesting that that's where we're heading. And there's every chance, and certainly in the Senate, but no one is going to have a majority. And I think this is the election where we can tackle housing affordability. And I think people want it tackled. And it's not just people who are struggling to get into the market. It's like parents looking at their kids going, oh, hang on, actually something is different from where it used to be for me. And I can see the problems that are coming now for future generations. We've said I can't speak for what Anthony Albanese and Labor will say they'll do. I'll leave it up to you listeners to decide whether or not, if they're one or two seats away from the Treasury benches, whether they're really not going to talk with people who are sitting on the crossbench. But I can just speak for what we're going to do. And what we've said is that this, together with climate, are going to be at the top of the list that we put on the table. And one of the things that we're seeing this time that we haven't seen last time from Labor is a move towards more spending in social housing, and at least they're taking one step towards it. And so it's one of those areas, I think, where it's ripe for agreement, and we can put our ideas on the table, they can put theirs, and I reckon it's something where we'd have a lot of common ground to talk about.
Okay, I'm just going to fully admit this because there's no point in pretending. I'm not hugely cluey about economics, but I do know a little bit about supply and demand. And if there's suddenly more supply in the market, the prices kind of go down. So will this drive house prices down? And is that going to piss off quite a lot of people in Australia who own homes and are hoping to maybe fund their retirement that way, or to, you know, use that as a way to build wealth creation for their families?
Well, I guess that's part of the reason that we're saying you can continue to have it for your one investment property, continue to take those breaks if you sort of built things around that. But I guess...
But I want 10 properties, Adam.
Well, you know, good on you, but I don't know that you should be lining up for a government handout for it. I guess that's our point, you know, basically. There's better things for government to be spending its money on. But look, I think part of what we're talking about is developing an alternative pathway in, right? And like saying, let's stop the insane, you know, incredible price rises, like stop it going up quite so quickly by removing a bit of the heat. But there needs to be an alternative way in, and that's affordable for people. So we're saying, I guess the market will continue to do what it does, but let's develop a parallel pathway for people who are currently locked out, because otherwise they'll never get in. And that's the pathway where it's affordable, where it's pegged to your income, and where you can buy in for, say, $300,000.
I want to ask you about Labor and the Coalition's plan for housing. There is a catch, though. You're only allowed to say one nice thing about either of those policies. So let's start with the Coalition. What is one nice thing about Scott Morrison's first home buyer grant scheme?
It is lovely for you if you are a seller of a house, because it helps push up the price of housing. And as a seller, you'll probably do very well out of it.
Interesting. That's good. That I'm sure my brother would be excited about that.
I can see you. I know our listeners can't. You are saying that through very gritted teeth, sir. Okay, to Labor's plan, they've got 10,000 spots, a 2% deposit required, and a shared equity scheme of up to 40%. What's one nice thing about Labor's plan?
Well, it's good that they've recognised that part of the solution is government building some more housing, but it's kind of a drop in the ocean. Because it won't touch the sides, because the problem is much, much bigger than that scheme will solve.
Okay, we veered from the nice thing to the reality.
Now, Adam, can you say one nice thing about Jan before you go?
This is the loveliest podcast I've ever been involved in. This is terrific.
God, if you were as sincere as you were saying that with the last two, Adam, I don't know whether I believe you or not.
You might believe it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like all our episodes, we kind of like to keep voters front and centre. So if you're a voter, you're going to head to the booth May 21. If housing is a really big issue for you, Adam, what would you counsel voters to think about this May?
So this election is going to be really close, and the Greens are set to be the most powerful third party in the parliament. And if you vote Greens, we will kick the Liberals out, because they've pushed up housing prices. And in balance of power, one of our top priorities will be to push the next government to tackle housing affordability by building 1 million new homes over the next 20 years that people can rent for 25% of their income or buy into for $300,000. We're putting renters and first home buyers and people locked out of the housing market right at the top of our priority list.
And if you don't get in, can we look forward to 20 million dollar homes being built?
You know, schemes for gold-plated bathrooms will continue under the Liberals. I'm sure that is the case.
Hey, Adam, thanks so much for joining us on Jan Fran Has Issues and talking us through all things housing, and bon courage for the next few days and weeks of the campaign.
Thanks very much.
Jan Fran Has Issues.
Always great to talk to Adam Bann, and always great to discuss what a utopia could look like, Jan.
Well, somebody has to, Dan, because everyone else's policies are too real and too tangible. Someone's got to have us thinking about the bigger picture here.
That's not true. That's not true. The Coalition's policy is actually really good. Have you heard their campaign launch for it?
I haven't, but something tells me I'm about to.
Here it is. Take a listen.
The federal government is working hard to ensure all Australians have a home with CheckBuilder. We're building 10,000 new homes over the next 100 years using the most sustainable resource known to the Coalition, novelty-sized checks. Previously, every single novelty-sized check that a Coalition politician gives to a scout hall, sporting club or small business had to be shredded at a bank in a novelty-sized shredder. But with CheckBuilder, they will be turned into social housing. Rest your head each night in a room constructed of Scott Morrison's broken promises.
I'm very okay with the idea of building car parks.
Take your morning dump surrounded by the signature of Bridget McKenzie.
I am very proud of the sports grants program.
Or stand in your kitchen surrounded by million-dollar views of million-dollar checks made out for Josh Frydenberg's car parks that never got built.
Now, with respect to the car parks in my own electorate, they haven't been built as yet.
And the more promises the Coalition makes, the more houses we can build. With CheckBuilder. And that's a promise you can take to the bank.
Authorised by the novelty-sized government run by novelty-sized men, Canberra.
Yes, CheckBuilder.
Yeah, it's good.
We criticise the government for not doing enough to combat climate change and a deteriorating planet, but they are recycling, and that's what I like.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, on that recycling bit, you know that recycling ad campaign they put out a few months ago about how the government is turning trash into new things?
No.
That ad campaign cost $11 million and the actual donation, the actual climate action to actually create that thing was like something like $3 million.
Yes. Hashtag fail. My goodness.
So, yeah, these guys are big on recycling. It's fantastic.
All right, what's coming up in next week's show, Dan?
Next week's show, we are once again going to be promising to talk to you about climate, but like an every other media organisation, we will probably not talk about climate, but talk about what happened on maths last night.
No, we are going to talk about climate. That is happening next week because I know it is one of your favourite topics and we are going to squeeze it the hell in there before the election because it also happens to be quite important.
Yeah, it is the number one topic on everyone's lips according to ABC Vote Compass, so that's pretty interesting stuff. And one other thing, don't forget, we are doing a live Irrational Fear show for our 10-year anniversary at the Opera Freakin' House. A huge lineup, including Gabby Bolt, Mark Humphreys, Paul McDermott is doing it too. Sammy Shah is coming up from Melbourne for it, Lewis Hobber, as well as myself. Oh, and Veronica Milsom as well. It is going to be a great 10-year show, so do get your tickets to that. Go to comedy.com.au for that one. In the meantime, let's thank some people who helped put this show together. Big thanks to everyone involved in making this show today. FNK Media, thank you so much. You are wonderful, excellent producers. Big thanks to Adam Bant and big thanks to Eliza Owen. Big thanks to you, Jan. Big thanks to the Patreon supporters who keep us running. Big thanks to the Jib Foundation for financially supporting this podcast. Big thanks to Rode Mics for our gear. And also big thanks to the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation where Jan and I record this show.
And remember to vote rationally.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.